I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. This hour, yesterday's House Intelligence Committee hearing on Russia with the FBI Director James Comey and the Director of the NSA, Admiral Michael Rogers. We have a lot to talk about. We'll have two guests with us during the course of the hour. How is the White House responding to this? The phrase, a dark cloud, a big gray cloud, is now over Trump's White House as he is under investigation, has been since July, and maybe in the months to come. What does it do to the ability to govern? We're going to have two guests with us. We'll look very closely at the substance of yesterday's hearing. Shannon Pettypiece will start us off. She's the White House correspondent for Bloomberg News and a contributor to Bloomberg TV and Business Week. She was previously with the New York Times and newspapers in Miami and in Cleveland. Later this hour, Devlin Barrett, who writes about national security, homeland security, and counterterrorism for the Washington Post. He joined the Post in 2017 after 15 years with the Wall Street Journal. He will join us a little bit later this hour. Though we will start with the words of FBI Director James Comey, who said this yesterday before the House Intelligence Committee.
I've been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts.
We'll talk about how the Republicans grilled James Comey, how the Democrats grilled him, what are the areas of Democratic concerns. We will talk about that and look at the possible players and where this investigation goes and how the White House is responding to this. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I'm sure many of you watched the hearings very carefully yesterday and have your own comments, and we'd like to hear them. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. And we start with Shannon Pettypiece. Hello, Shannon. Thanks very much for being with us.
I'm glad to be here.
It was a rather extraordinary day yesterday, wasn't it?
In any other administration, this would have been a complete sort of bombshell day, and not to, you know, sort of downplay any of this at all, but yeah, kind of considering in the past 60 days the amount of drama and surprises there's been out of this administration, it was almost kind of like one more, felt to me like, you know, just another one to add to the list of sort of extraordinary days in the first 2 months now.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the Trump administration sees it just another day, or do you get any signs from covering the White House that they see this as rather big?
And certainly not to just, you know, downplay this as it's any sort of one another day, but we've had some big days covering the White House. In the briefing yesterday, I was, in the chair, and spokesman Sean Spicer certainly came out, fighting, defending, prepared, you know, to take on, you know, tough questions from reporters and firing back, and kept sort of reiterating, you know, there's nothing there, no one's found anything yet, but just the fact that the FBI is investigating Russian interference in the presidential election and whether those affiliated with the Trump campaign had any connection to the Russians, was certainly something that has them on the defense. At one point, Spicer tried to downplay, these sort of Trump associates that Comey has said are being looked at as they weren't really involved in the campaign. And someone raised the question of Paul Manafort, who was the campaign, who was, you know, running the campaign for a period. And, you know, Spicer tried to just, you know, push that off as, oh, you know, he was hardly involved. And, well, you know, if the person running your campaign is hardly involved in the campaign, you know, even if it was for a period of a few months, that's, that's probably really the sort of the best defense they had there.
The other part that came out early on was here you had a sitting president, Donald Trump, accusing an American president, Barack Obama, of wiretapping his offices. It was rebuked formally by Comey, by the Justice Department yesterday. The president then has been making false statements, alleging criminal activity by his predecessor, which is a pretty big deal. Will Donald Trump be forced to say that he was wrong about this? Should he? And people are asking questions then. What does the wiretapping testimony, does it doom his credibility with voters? And what about what it does with members of his own party?
I mean, all excellent questions. I don't know if he will. I mean, I would be surprised if he will at some point apologize. He's not really one for giving apologies. Sean Spicer was asked about this yesterday again at the briefing. You know, he just reiterated the point of, we haven't found anything yet. That's why we're going to do the investigation. We haven't found anything yet. And, you know, people pressed him on, is there something you think they'll find? What might they find? When will you be satisfied that they haven't found anything? And, you know, when it comes to the wiretapping, we're still looking, you know, they might find something. And when it comes to the Russian, collusion with, you know, campaign associates, we haven't found anything. The story, there's nothing here. So definitely a double standard they mm-hmm. have when it comes to those two sort of parallel tracks of investigations.
The Republicans on the committee yesterday were very concerned about the leaks, and the Democrats seem to be more concerned about the substance of those leaks. Are you hearing from a number of Republicans on the Hill that they're also concerned about the substance of the leaks?
I think, yeah. I mean, certainly, and some have come out and, you know, and said, yeah, that a lot of things going on are concerning. Certainly, as you can see from the healthcare debate, you know, the Republican Party is not marching in lockstep, arms united. There's people, members of Congress who, did not strongly, vocally support, President Trump when he was a candidate, have raised concerns about a lot of things the administration has done. And so, there is definitely a opposition and concern on the Hill right now.
Mm-hmm. The Democrats were looking at the substance of some of the allegations. Adam Schiff was particularly good, I think, on this because he looked at the timetable of what had happened last summer. There were also some concerns that all of this was coming out now, that President Obama who was also briefed on this last summer, didn't make mention of it before the campaign, before the election, actually, and that James Comey did not mention this. He was conducting really two investigations simultaneously of both candidates, and yet we only found about one candidate. Is this particularly upsetting to Democrats that you've spoken with in Washington?
Well, and sort of the question, why are you only looking at, the Clinton campaign was involved, had connections too, and the White House would try and bring up the point, what about the Clintons' connections with Russia and meetings they had mm-hmm. and money given to the Clinton Foundation? I think the response they're getting is she's not president. And if she was president right now, I'm sure that, the Republicans would be trying to do every investigation hearing they could into the Clinton Foundation or whether it was Russia or her emails or something else. But she's not president. And so, to the winner goes the investigations, I guess.
Do you know who's doing, like yesterday there were Donald Trump tweets that were coming during the actual hearing, and some Republicans were reflecting what the president had to say in some of their questioning. Do we know now who's doing those tweets? Is it Donald Trump, the president?
So there used to be a theory that you could tell the tweets that were his versus the tweets that were being done by staff based on which one said at the bottom they were sent from an iPhone or an Android. Again, that's just a theory. Now all the tweets, at least for the past 10 days or so, say they're coming from an iPhone. So I don't know if the president has gotten a new phone or someone is tweeting for him, but the conspiracy theorists out there are now have less to believe, one less piece of evidence to go on is sort of where Trump's tweets are coming from. I mean, it is pretty clear some of them do come from, are very sort of official sounding. It sounds like something either someone asked him to tweet or something that someone's tweeted for him. They don't really sound like they're in his voice. I feel like those probably did seem like they were in his voice, but he had a very busy day of meetings as well. And we don't know exactly when one meeting ends and when another one begins, but I remember there were a couple that came, and I thought, well, aren't you supposed to be meeting with Bill Gates right now? And this is happening right in the middle of the healthcare meeting. So all just speculation, I guess. Sorry, I can't tell you more.
Mm-hmm. There have been some comparisons made by some people in the press, some political analysts, to Watergate, the whole thing that began yesterday. Let me read you just a little bit of what Howard Fineman from the Huffington Post wrote yesterday and see if you agree or not. Not since a White House aide named Alexander Butterfield told the Watergate Committee in 1973 that President Richard Nixon had bugged his own Oval Office has an investigative hearing made it so clear that a presidency was in serious legal jeopardy. Now we know for sure that while no one tapped Trump's phones, his campaign circle is in the gun sights of the FBI. Is that going too far?
Well, I do think that if Democrats were in control of Congress or one branch of Congress, we would be seeing a lot more investigations and pressure on the president around these issues. I mean, certainly the Republicans are holding hearings and they are conducting their investigations, but you know, the Republicans aren't going to be, at least at this point, holding an impeachment hearing, you know, on their, you know, their party's president. And so, but in 2018, if things are to flip, there is a small margin the Republicans hold in the Senate, a larger one they hold in the House. But 2018, a lot of things could change. And with Democrats in power, sort of comments and feelings like that, you know, that you just read, might become more in the mainstream in Washington, you know, with that shift in power that could take place in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Do you hear people saying, oh, this is just like the beginning of Watergate or not?
Well, I think, you know, it kind of depends on your party and your political right. allegiance. And, yeah, certainly Democrats, there are Democrats that feel that way. I think that there are, you know, Republicans who have really said, you know, they're very concerned with this. John McCain, Lindsey Graham have been two of the ones out there sort of, you know, raising concern and sort of more on the opposition side. But right now they all have to make this calculation, too, is President Trump the most popular person in the Republican Party right now, or is he the least popular? And that's a calculation that they're going to have to continue making over the next year as they get ready to go into the 2018 midterms, and whether they're going to stand by the president, and that's where they're going to hitch their political coattails, or whether they're going to go against him, and that's going to be the best thing for them politically.
Mm. And where is he now, the most popular or the least popular?
Well, this week, his popularity really took a turn. I think the approval ratings were around, I'm kind of nervous about quoting a number, I think it was around 38% or something.
Right.
I'm sure you guys can check that. But they took a big drop. But I will say, you know, even during the elections, going right into the elections, he was very unpopular through that entire time. And obviously we know what happens. So just because his approval ratings are low and he's not that popular doesn't mean, you know, he's not going to be here for 8 years, and doesn't mean that it's safe to go out against him if you're someone who's up for re-election in 2018.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the enormity of this story, when you're trying to work on a major health care bill, when you're trying to proceed with other kinds of legislation that the president would like to enact, with this big investigation over your head, what does that do to your ability to move legislation forward in terms of, say, the health care bill? Is he busy at work today trying to get that passed? Will that happen by tomorrow in the House, do you think?
Right now, it's looking like it's going to be an extremely close vote. And I think what makes that a close vote has more to do with not so much whether you are for or against the president, and whether you're ready to come out against the president. Even though today he started using sort of that stick a little bit of you know, warning people that, you know, you might not be here in 2018 if you're not for this bill that's being backed by the White House. But I think that is being more driven by a moment of, are you going to be the one in the Republican Party when it comes time to vote to repeal Obamacare, regardless of how you feel it was done? Are you going to be the one who sticks your neck out and says, no, I'm not going to vote to repeal Obamacare because of all these technical things I don't like? Or are you going to be the one to place a vote that, you know, could jeopardize health insurance for millions and millions of Americans and face that in 2018? That's, I think, right, more of the calculus people are trying to make, which is tough one.
Yeah, it's a hard one. We're going to welcome phone calls. Our guest, the first part of the hour, is Shannon Pettypiece, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News, contributor to Bloomberg TV and also Business Week. She was at the hearing, Sean Spicer's press conference yesterday, where he was responding to, it was kind of in the middle of the House Intelligence Committee hearing on Russia, so it was in the middle of that, and he was responding to what James Comey had said, the director of the FBI, and she was there. She's been covering Donald Trump. The second half hour, will be talking about the nitty-gritty of what was said in those hearings with Devin Barrett, who writes about national security, homeland security, and counterterrorism for the Washington Post. Here is our phone number, and I guess the question to ask you is, after yesterday's hearing, some have said there is a cloud over Trump's White House as this investigation proceeds. What does that do for his ability to be believable when the wiretapping claims were found to be not true? Does it put his truthfulness in question before the voters, before you, before people in his party? What do you think? And what do you make of the hearings yesterday? I'm sure many of you watched. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network. All right, our phones are crowded. I expected they would be. Let's go right to them. And Patrick in Richland, our first caller for you, Shannon. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, hello. Public Wisconsin Radio. I guess my question is this. Trump is so undermining the institutions so bad, like this business of the American people, or the press is the enemy of the American people. That's almost scary. My question boils down really to this, though. With the Republican Party, if Trump stopped right now somehow, you know, they could get rid of him right now. How much damage have they already done to the party? And don't the Republicans realize that he is totally undermining the very institutions, their party, one of them, to the point they're, who's going to take him serious?
That's the big calculus for the Republicans in Congress right now. I mean, some of them tried to come out and oppose Trump in the election, really tried forcefully, this whole Never Trump movement. I mean, tried to stop him, and they just couldn't. And so he's still a very powerful force and has a very powerful, strong following. And so obviously we'll see what happens over the next few months. There's still some in the party who are kind of like hoping that he'll get settled in a bit more, that, you know, as the office has weight more, as it takes a little bit more, you know, as he gets surpassed the learning curve of the first 2 months, he might change. But there's been talk of this Trump pivot, forever now. Some people thought they saw it in the State of the Union, and then, he sort of went right back to a lot of his old ways. So I don't know. I think what's also going to be determined for the party going forward is, what happens with the issues outside of their control, like the economy and national security, largely outside of their control. You know, I'm just sort of mean broader forces of things that could change in the past few years, and who the Democratic candidate's going to be.
Thanks, Patrick, very much for your call. Claire in Plymouth is next. Hi, Claire.
Hey, great stuff today. Really awesome conversation. I just, to be someone who sits in those White House press briefings, I think has got to be so interesting, would be with a quite big question mark at the end. But as we watched yesterday, President Trump down at his rally in Kentucky, and you see the strong support that he has from his core constituency, and the people who sit on the other side of the fence, as I was a #NeverTrump person, but who has family and friends who quite obviously are on the different side. How do we as a nation, when we are facing some very serious issues that we see as a result of this budget and just the core values of this president, is that I see us dividing more. I see the chasm widening more. How can we possibly, what is the good news? Is there good news? Can we get to that good news? How are we going to become a nation that can come together when the core constituency of Donald Trump is absolutely still in his camp and believes the stuff that he says because of all of the ways that he says it?
Shannon.
I think regardless of who the president is or was going to be, people who feel a certain way weren't going to go away on either side, and those feelings weren't going to go away based on an outcome of an election. So, I kind of remember, even going into the election kind of thinking and wondering, well, on both sides, there's so much passion and sort of where does that go from here? But there are things that this White House obviously could have done out of the gate that weren't as divisive and that they knew weren't as politically polarizing. They could have done things, that had more compromise, like the travel ban. They knew that was a controversial issue. They didn't choose to go that way. And what instead they have chose to do is exactly what their supporters wanted, exactly what he promised on the campaign trail. And whether that divides or unites people, hey, they're saying we made a promise we were going to do these things and we're going to do them. And that's, they have been very consistent on saying we're going to do the things we're doing. Now, I think there's a lot of people who voted for the president who were kind of hoping he wouldn't do some of those things, but they might be happy to see that he's doing others. So, there's going to be some things they do that you like and some things that he doesn't like. I don't know, you're asking the good news. I guess it kind of depends on what, side of the perspective you come at, because there's a lot of people who feel like, this is the greatest time they've seen in their life, and they have more hope than they've had in a long time. So it's amazing how when are we going to see the good news can, change so much depending on what state you're in or what perspective you come at this from.
One more call for you, and then we're just switching guests and focusing a lot more on the hearing yesterday. Tom in Appleton. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, back to Russia. That's not surprising. Things like that are only surprising in places like Wisconsin that these revelations are coming out. My sister in Massachusetts, before the election, said everybody on the East Coast, I know that's an exaggeration, but she said everybody on the East Coast knows Trump was broke before the election, several years before the election, and has propped up his empire and his lifestyle with Russian mob money, as she put it. So these kind of ideas are very similar to the revelations that are coming out now. And to me, it's indicative of that. There's a huge amount of smoke. We're only getting a little whiff of it here in Wisconsin, but people in more, better educated places have been talking about this for quite some time.
Thanks, Tom, very much for the call. We thank you so much. We'll let you go back to an incredibly busy Washington, D.C. Shannon, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Shannon Pettypiece, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News, contributor to Bloomberg TV and Business Week. Devlin Barrett is joining us now. He writes about national security, homeland security, and counterterrorism for the Washington Post. Joined the Post in 2017 after 15 years with the Wall Street Journal. Started as a copy boy at the New York Post when he was 18 years old and eventually rose to desk assistant. Devlin, thanks very much for being with us. Hi.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, I thought that yesterday's hearing was absolutely extraordinary. And I'm wondering, first of all, now that we've had just a little look at what it is the Democrats want to have investigated, what the FBI director did just by showing up yesterday, indicating that the public has a very deep interest in this. Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat, called for an independent commission, perhaps a special prosecutor. He looked at the size of his staff. staff and said to Comey, you know, we don't have enough people power in order to proceed with this. We need somebody to look at this very thoroughly. Indications, and there are stories coming out today, which we'll talk about, that there's a whole lot to be investigated here. Is there a need, after watching yesterday, do you think, for an independent commission?
Well, it's certainly what the Democrats are pushing for. You know, what you saw on display, as much as you saw the news being in what Director Comey said about the investigation, the other real big thing clearly on display yesterday was the degree to which Democrats and Republicans are really approaching this from, you know, very, very different places.
Right.
You know, the Democrats spent most of the hearing trying to get Comey to talk about which individuals were under investigation and what they might be under investigation for. He really wouldn't bite on any of those questions. But the Republicans spent most of the time talking about who might have leaked specific details of these investigations and urging the FBI to pursue those leakers and to punish those leakers as quickly as possible. So you already see a real significant partisan divide on how to think about this whole issue. And, you know, frankly, I think the Democrats point to that divide as another reason why there should be some sort of independent look at it.
Mm-hmm. I want to play just a condensation of what Representative Adam Schiff said yesterday. This is a look at the possible connections, not saying that there are any, but to look at the possible connections, perhaps circumstantial evidence. There are indications, of course, and some of these are proven, that a lot of the Trump campaign managers, people associated with the campaign, did have some connections with Russia. And that's not illegal. But he outlined things in such a way, and this is just a part of what he said. He came up with some 12 instances that should be of concern and a point of investigation. Here's what Representative Schiff said, and I'd like for you to respond to these points, if you would, Devlin, after we hear it.
In early July, Carter Page, someone candidate Trump identified as one of his national security advisors, travels to Moscow on a trip approved by the Trump campaign. While in Moscow, he gives a speech critical of the United States and other Western countries for what he believes is a hypocritical focus on democratization and efforts to fight corruption. According to Christopher Steele, a former British intelligence officer who is reportedly held in high regard by U.S. intelligence, Russian sources tell him that Page has also had a secret meeting with Igor Sechin, CEO of the Russian gas giant Rosneft. Session is reported to be a former KGB agent and close friend of Putin's. According to Steele's Russian sources, Page is offered brokerage fees by Sechin on a deal involving a 19% share of the company. According to Reuters, the sale of a 19.5% share of Rosneft later takes place with unknown purchasers and unknown brokerage fees. Also, according to Steele's Russian sources, the campaign is offered documents damaging to Hillary Clinton, which the Russians would publish through an outlet that gives them deniability, like WikiLeaks. The hacked documents would be in exchange for a Trump administration policy that de-emphasizes Russia's invasion of Ukraine and instead focuses on criticizing NATO countries for not paying their fair share. Policies which, even as recently as the president's meeting last week with Angela Merkel, have now presciently come to pass. In the middle of July, Paul Manafort, the Trump campaign manager and someone who is long on the payroll of pro-Russian Ukrainian interests, attends the Republican Party convention. Carter Page, back from Moscow, also attends the convention. According to Steele, it was Manafort who chose Page to serve as a go-between for the Trump campaign and Russian interests. Ambassador Kislyak, who presides over a Russian embassy in which diplomatic personnel would later be expelled as likely spies, also attends the Republican Party convention and meets with Carter Page and additional Trump advisors J.D. Gordon and Waleed Faris. It was J.D. Gordon who approved Page's trip to Moscow. Ambassador Kislyak also meets with Trump National Security Campaign Chair, and now Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Sessions would later deny meeting with Russian officials during his Senate confirmation hearing.
And that's just a portion of what Representative Adam Schiff had to say yesterday. When he was talking, I kept thinking the whole time, I wonder if Comey is privy to all of this and investigations are always underway in all of these areas or not. I just, he didn't play his cards, did he?
No, but a couple things on Schiff's presentation, which I agree was very interesting. I think Schiff made, in some ways, the best single summary of why Democrats are worried and why some non-Democrats are worried about all the connections. He really did sort of weave together all of these pieces that, frankly, it is a little hard to follow some of the connections and some of the alleged connections and all the people involved. The one caution, though, I have to put on what Schiff did, and I think it was pretty effective, but the one caution I have to put on it is if you notice in that, especially in that clip you played, he keeps mentioning Steele. Steele is a former British spy who compiled the dossier that became such an explosive thing shortly after the election. And the tricky part about that dossier for reporters and, frankly, I think for voters and the public too, is that most of the truly alarming allegations in that document are unverified and to a certain degree unverifiable. Like, you know, there's a lot of stuff in that document that you would have to basically be in the room to know whether or not it was true or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do want to put that caution on it because, you know, a lot of the more damning accusations come from that dossier, and the credibility of the more alarming parts of that dossier are still, frankly, an open question.
Mm-hmm. And could be used to blackmail the president, and so you'd have to have been in that room, and it may be almost impossible to find out if that was true or not. Your paper had another story today. I want you to comment on this. Today in the Washington Post, a Ukrainian lawmaker released a new financial document today allegedly showing that Paul Manafort, the former campaign chair for Trump, laundered payments from the party of a disgraced ex-leader of Ukraine using offshore accounts in Belize and Kyrgyzstan. I'm wondering two questions. One, if stories like this are going to kind of dribble out day by day by day, so the story is always going to be with us. And two, I've read that places in Ukraine are also on this story. I'm wondering, and they're going to be feeding information, are there other outlets around the world that will also be feeding information in addition to what places like the Post will be giving us?
Well, I definitely think Ukraine is going to continue to be a part of this story because Paul Manafort did work there for a long time, and those jobs and that issue still is part of what the FBI is investigating. So I think that whole issue of were there bribes or secret cash payments, that sort of thing, which surfaced during the campaign and back in the summer, hasn't really been answered definitively yet, at least in the public space. So stories like today's and other stories I do think will keep coming out. The challenge is you have to make a couple hops to get to the part that's really important for Americans, which is the first step of that investigation in the Ukraine is, were there corrupt payments made within the Ukrainian government? Then you get to the next hop, assuming that you can say that there were, was Paul Manafort a recipient of corrupt payments made in the Ukrainian government? And then it becomes another hop to say, okay, well, if such payments were made, does Paul Manafort have connections to Russian intelligence or Russian government officials? And so I think these things are all important, and these things are all under investigation, but those are the sort of the connections that investigators at the FBI are looking for, investigators in Congress are looking for. These are the questions they're trying to answer. And you know, one of the oddities of this whole process is that the questions about Manafort are really part of a larger argument with inside the Ukraine about Ukrainian politics.
Right.
And so that will always be a part of the debate about what happened there.
Mm-hmm. There, in a piece that appeared yesterday in the Post, or maybe this morning, you co-authored it, you write about Representative Devin Nunes, the committee chair, urging Comey to do this investigation as quickly as possible. He said there's a big gray cloud that you've now put over people who have very important work to do to lead this country. It's true. So you have to get to the bottom of this, and the faster you can do that, it's going to be better for all Americans. How fast will this be, do you think? And having this gray cloud over the administration does what to the country?
Well, I think that's a really important point, and I think, frankly, it was one of the ways in which Comey tried to send a signal yesterday that maybe was a little too subtle for some of the folks in the room, which is that counterintelligence investigations do not tend to be long-running affairs. I mean, many of them last years and years. This one has been going on since about last July. It is entirely possible that it continues for months and potentially years more. So I think one of the things that is alarming to, frankly, people in both parties is that this whole issue may just sort of sit unresolved for months and months. And I think Comey in some ways was trying to prepare them for that possibility. And it's very true that the chairman of the committee, Devin Nunes, was trying to push Comey to, you know, go fast if at all he possibly can. But what was interesting about that exchange to me is that Comey made no promises on that front. He was specifically asked to go fast, and his response was, "I understand." And so I do think that, you know, this big gray cloud that was described yesterday is likely to hang around for a long time. And, you know, it's not as if politics in Washington was going to be so unpolarized without this Russian investigation. But it's pretty clear that this Russian investigation is going to exacerbate that and intensify that, at least in the near term.
Mm-hmm. Devlin, who else is doing investigations and who may be likely to do so? Is the Post heavily on this story? Is the New York Times? Is the BBC? Who's on the story?
Oh, sure. All the major news organizations are chasing. Obviously, the main player in this investigative process is the FBI because, you know, they have investigative authorities and abilities that are basically unmatched anywhere else. But a bunch of congressional committees are doing investigations as well. That has led to calls from among the Democrats for an independent counsel-type structure to do an investigation. Already you've seen the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, recuse himself from this issue because of his own contacts with the Russian ambassador. And, you know, this one of the things that I think is worth remembering from the days of the Clinton email investigation is that these types of investigations can be really corrosive internally, and they can really sow doubt and distrust even within government agencies or within, you know, political groups. And, you know, one of the things that happened in the Clinton email investigation is that over time, even people involved in the work came to be concerned about other people involved in the work. And, you know, I think a lot of the folks who went through that experience are worried that if this Trump investigation drags on, as it very well may, you could see a similar sort of distrust spreading within the government, and they worry about that.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering if the American people, now that we've heard about all of this, and we'll hear more as the days go on, will we have a chance with a House committee or a Senate committee to hear testimony from people like James Sessions and Paul Manafort and Carter and all of these people who have been mentioned so far and others we may not know about? Will we hear from them?
We very well might. I mean, you know, one of the things that happened that was interesting as a result of yesterday's hearing was that Roger Stone, a longtime political operative whose name has surfaced in all this stuff and who is denied any wrongdoing, but who's nevertheless mentioned in all of these accounts, basically, said that he wants to testify in public about it and that he deserves a chance to, you know, counter these sorts of implications and accusations. And so we very well might get some of those folks to come to the Hill or in some other setting and speak publicly about it. That's still sort of an undetermined, you know, I think anytime someone's name is raised in a FBI investigation, their lawyer usually tells them this is not a good time to be speaking publicly about any of these things. So that's the other counterforce in this process. But I do think that if a significant amount of time passes and there's no, you know, big breakthroughs on the FBI investigative front, you will see more pressure to bring people before committees and have them answer questions before TV cameras.
What do you make of this story from the ABC today that the FBI had a court-approved warrant to eavesdrop on a sophisticated Russian organized crime money laundering network operating out of Trump Tower, three floors below where the penthouse is, the Trump penthouse residence? They had this for 2 years, ending in 2013. And they were running what is called an international money laundering, sports gambling, extortion ring. It led to a federal grand jury indictment of more than 30 people, including one of the world's most notorious Russian mafia bosses, who was called the Little Taiwanese. This guy slipped away. He remains a fugitive. But 5 months after indictment, he appeared near Donald Trump in the VIP section of the Moscow Miss Universe pageant.
Yeah, I mean, that investigation is absolutely true, and frankly, that's part of there are public record, public documents
yeah.
that say that they did that investigation, they did that surveillance. The challenge of trying to tie that to Trump in any way, though, is that guy and those individuals were basically using an apartment in his building. You wouldn't necessarily assume that because someone has a tenant who's a criminal that the landlord is himself involved in some sort of shady activity. So I mean it's that's certainly true. The basic gist of what you just described is certainly accurate, and it's reflected frankly in public court documents. I don't know that it ultimately says much about the real question that people have, which is what are the connections between, if any, between the Russian government and the Trump campaign. Because that is a case that's been known about in, you know, publicly filed case for a couple of years. And I have yet to speak to anyone who thinks there is a significant connection between this person who is a tenant and the campaign and the Russian government. So, I mean, we'll see if that comes to anything. But frankly, from my discussion with government officials, there's nothing in that they have seen about that case that makes them think it's connected to the Trump-Russia investigation.
We'll start taking phone calls and other kinds of messages for our guests in just one moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Email is ideas@wpr.org. Facebook, put your messages there. We love to read them, even if you're not on the air. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Devlin Barrett is our guest. He writes about national security, counterterrorism, homeland security for the Washington Post. And we'll be with you in just one moment. We're talking about yesterday's hearing before the House Intelligence Committee. This is the Ideas Network. And let's go to Facebook. I meant first this one to you, Devlin. Many presidents in the past, this is from John, have had influential vice presidents and advisors. Of most concern to me are the people who seem to help our current president decide about issues and how we will respond to them. Pence seems thoughtful and deliberate, but Trump listens to Bannon, Allen, and Fox News opinions, not necessarily their reporters.
Well, right, and you saw the one of the consequences of that just this week when the White House has been struggling to explain why it cited a Fox News personality for defending its claims that the government had wiretapped Trump and Trump Tower during the election. Everyone is basically, you know, the network seems to have retreated from that at this point, saying that they can't substantiate that claim, and the White House is basically pointed to Fox as well, saying, you know, well, we just relayed what they had reported. And you already see this sort of weird dynamic where the president seems to be relying not so much on what, you know, government agencies tell him, which arguably have some of the best information in the world, and instead seems to pull pretty frequently from what's just sort of out there in the media. And, you know, that has frankly create a lot of consternation among certain folks in D.C., but it's worth remembering that one of the dynamics here is that Trump ran for president as an outsider, you know, pledging to drain the swamp, to, you know, stop business as usual in Washington. One of the ways in which he has pledged to do that is to bring in a bunch of people who aren't D.C. people and do things differently.
Mm-hmm.
I think at a minimum you could say he is carrying through on that.
What are the consequences? Another part of the hearing yesterday was, as we all know, President Trump accused President Obama of wiretapping Trump Tower repeatedly. He said it over and over. Yesterday,
right.
James Comey said that simply was not the case, and the Justice Department said it was not the case. It is not the case. This is a fairly big thing for a president to do, to accuse another president of really criminal behavior. Aren't there any consequences for that?
To be honest, I don't think there's certainly no legal consequences to that we can see. I think the main consequence, potential consequence, is does at some point do statements like that and rebuttals of statements like that by people like Comey and by others, at some point does that start to wear away at Trump's credibility with his own base? You know, I think what you've seen so far is that base's support is pretty resilient and doesn't worry too much about stuff like that, even if, you know, much of D.C. gets very concerned about it, and certainly many Democrats are, you know, incredibly concerned about it. And I think if you, but if you look at the response from Trump's base, we've yet to see him say or do anything that really causes them to hold any significant doubts about him or about him as president. And you're seeing, I think the polling shows like a little bit of erosion in his support. Certainly his numbers aren't great by historical standards, but they're also, he's also not losing much of his base yet. And I think as long as that's the case, we're probably going to see, you know, similar types of statements.
Our number is 800-486-8655. In the minutes left, we'd like to concentrate on yesterday's hearing, please, the House Intelligence Committee hearing and the information that came from that. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Karen in Washburn County, hi.
Hi there. I have a comment and a question. First, the Republican Party has sought power by any means, regardless of the consequences, by supporting this particular president. And they have moved so far to the right that I don't believe that Republican is any longer the word for them. I believe that we're seeing a fascist movement ahead and afoot. If the Republicans do not handle these questions with serious intent, and some of their questioning yesterday appeared to take the situation not as seriously as it is, as though they don't understand that we're looking at a complicit situation with the Russians. If they are complicit, if they do not respond appropriately, what are the ramifications? What are the repercussions? Trump seems to hold himself at a standard above what a typical American president would hold himself as, more of a person of the world versus an American president, and perhaps believes he is above the law.
Devlin.
Yeah, it's a really good point, and I think one of the things you're seeing as this whole wiretap issue plays out and this Russia issue plays out is, to what degree are Republicans on the Hill going to accede or at least not publicly contradict the president's claims on this stuff? And I think this whole issue has put the congressional Republicans in a difficult spot. I don't think they really want to spend a ton of time talking about non-existent wiretaps and how non-existent they are. And I think one of the ways in which this is creating problems for members of his own party is that they're not comfortable with this conversation because they don't believe what the president, a lot of them do not believe what the president has said is correct. And what you're seeing is sort of a, you can ask them about it and they'll say, I don't believe that to be true. At some point, if this keeps up, you might see more folks on the Republican side trying to distance themselves, frankly, from those types of statements because they don't know how to defend it and they don't think it helps them.
You wrote in today's piece, Republicans were most exercised yesterday by leaks to the media, information shared with the press resulting in stories since the election on the intelligence community's conclusion about Moscow's desire to see Trump win and on contacts between the administration or close associates. Rightfully so, Republicans concerned about leaks?
Well, I think the hunt for leakers is always, you know, look, I'm a reporter. I'm generally like it when people talk to us.
Sure.
I do think there's obviously a concern that if certain types of classified information get out in the public space, that could affect public safety or national security. And I think, you know, frankly, every reporter I know who covers this stuff is very careful to be responsible about this stuff. What's interesting to me about the push against leaking in this context is, you know, it's largely the Republicans who are concerned about leaks at this point because they're leaks about the Russia investigation. And they would like those to stop. And, you know, Democrats are more focused on getting out as much information about the investigation as possible. So you're seeing, it's a real interesting split in the sense that Republicans are trying to turn the conversation into one about leaks. I don't know how successful that was. I don't think many of the headlines from yesterday's hearing were about leaks. But it is another indicator of how political this whole issue of Russia is right now.
Yeah. Thanks, Karen. Quickly, Mike in Milwaukee, getting short on time. Hi, Mike. Mike?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
Yeah, there was a lot of subtle innuendo yesterday trying to draw some parallels to Watergate with what's going on now. You had, you know, the physical break-in of the DNC. Here we had a software hack into the DNC. You've got, you know, individuals being paid, you know, with Russia maybe receiving some sort of payoff in you know, easing of sanctions. What was the connection that ended up bringing Nixon down, and how would that play out or have to be proven if Trump was orchestrating this?
Yeah, I think that the Butterfield, the thing that the tapes brought him down, ultimately what he had to say. We don't have time to go into Watergate, but make the comparison here. Is it a valid comparison, this similarities to Watergate, and as big or not as big as Watergate? 15 seconds, Devlin.
Well, I think we'll have to see what more the investigation comes up with. The main takeaway is that, you know, Watergate took down President Nixon largely because of the post-break-in cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
And already some lawmakers are suggesting that could be an issue here.
All right. Thank you. Devlin Barrett, our guest for The Washington Post. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this interesting show and Colleen Duvall for on-air production. News coming up. We'll return.